Open Mic, the podcast.
Live your life your way at home with Davita Home Care.
Brought to you by WLR.
Eunice Power is one of Ireland's best known chefs, a TV chef, an entrepreneur, an Irish Times food writer, a tutor, a passionate promoter of food tourism. She loves teaching at the Tannery Cooking School in Dungarvan. She's been living in Dungarvan for many, many years, as you know, her family very well known in the area as well. She writes for the Irish Times, as I say. She regularly joins Dahi and Maura on the RT1 Today Show. She works with Fáilte Ireland, Tourism Ireland, and is a director of the West Waterford Food Festival. Having previously worked in the food business in Ireland and Britain and Switzerland, she launched her gourmet catering company in 2001. A zealous commitment to using only the best seasonal Waterford produce, infused with creativity and flair. A mammy to three wonderful boys. 6 months ago, tragedy struck. An accident. A terrible, terrible accident in the kitchen. Her son, Jerome, was dead. Jerome, son to Eunice and to Edmund, had two brothers, Michal and Kieran. The death notice read that Jerome is deeply mourned and sadly missed by his heartbroken parents, brothers, grandmother, Ethna Sheehan, aunts, Evie Flynn, Emily Sheehan, Mary Flynn, Catherine and Claire Power, uncles Jim, John, Mark Power, grandaunts, granduncles, cousins, extended family, neighbours and a wide circle of friends. The inquest into his death just took place recently. Eunice has never spoken about this before. It's still very raw. She agreed to do an interview with us as she tries to understand in some small way the meaning of life and the importance of love. She let me into her house for a chat, and this week she launched her new cookery book, and we talk about that as well. We started by having a cup of tea and a little bit of food. This is lovely. I've just eaten the cucumber. What have I eaten? What am I eating?
So you're having a feta cheesecake, Damien, imagine.
It's lovely. What's in it?
So we have Greek yogurt, eggs, flour, very little flour, feta cheese, some Gruyere. And we just beat all of that together, very lightly, and then I put some Gruyere on top. Oh, sorry, there's leek in there as well, and some onion, and then some dill and Gruyere on top, and I baked it in the oven. I know, it's lovely, isn't it?
Just like that. Just put it. Just like just.
Yeah. I knew you were coming, and I was I'm actually having a lemon cake, which is lovely. And again, it's an olive oil lemon cake. It's three or four ingredients, and I've got some lovely sliced tangerines, which are just coming in at the supermarket, and some a country store rather, and some pomegranate seeds, and again some yogurt. So you can see I had lots of yogurt in my fridge. Needed to be used up.
I'm going to take a little picture and we'll put this up on social media as well. And the tea is gorgeous. No, it's okay. It's nice. It's okay. We have on the front here my Irish kitchen table, and this is not the reason I'm here, but it's a lovely, lovely book. Congratulations.
And we're
at your kitchen table. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's very appropriate that you get a preview of my kitchen table at my kitchen table. And when I got a copy of it in the post, and I was really. You know, it's quite unusual to see yourself grinning up from the cover of a cookbook. So I had to actually sit with it for a few days. I was sort of horrified, going, oh my God! And then to get used to it. But I actually love it, yeah.
It's a beautiful publication. Talk to me about how long did it take and the essence of this compared to maybe some other books.
Mm. Well, I suppose I had most of the recipe. So I've been cooking for years and years, and I've had to actually commit to paper quite a lot because I've written for various publications and for Today Show. So it was really just narrowing it down to 100 recipes, which was which is kind of difficult to do, because even as I'm cooking now, I'm a very seasonal cook, and I was making something the other day. There are almond slices with minced meat, and I thought, God, they'd be lovely in the book. The next book. They'll have to wait till the next book. I'll have to start to file for the next book. So the book is full of, I suppose, family-friendly recipes, and it's sort of a snapshot of my life, maybe, you know, and what goes on around my kitchen table and what we eat. lot of the time, maybe what I cook when I'm catering, my brown bread, people would be delighted to see is in there so that they can make their own brown bread now, and I can eventually, over the years, retire from country store. It's a very everyday, it's an everyday cookbook where you can go into a supermarket in Dungarvan, or if you don't feel like going right into town, you can go to the butcher and go into the fruit and veg shop in Mitchell Street and get ingredients for a dish. I felt I wanted to keep everything very simple, because food, whilst it's all about flavour and nourishment, it's also about bringing people together and sitting down and discussing life over dinner. And if dinner gets too complicated and it runs on and prep goes on too long, the chef gets much too cross and a tension is created, and sometimes, you know, mealtimes aren't the nice relaxing event that they should be. And how do I know that? I know that from experience of, you know, being a really busy mum trying to cook for people and not always having it appreciated, and being rushed myself and feeling that what I did was sort of, you know, underappreciated. And you know, and very often when your kids get used to you cooking, your family gets used to cooking, they aren't always sort of, you know, brimming with praise, you know, because it's just expected of you. Mm. But you know, I look back at that and smile. Mm. Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit, in terms of the style, like one of the Avoca cookery books, whether that's, I say that in a positive way.
Yeah.
The pictures are very well done. The presentation, it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a very visual book.
Very visual.
The photographer who did the photo, so in case you didn't know this, I didn't know this, it's a whole team that goes into books. So, I obviously wrote the book and came up with recipes. Then I worked with Gil to choose a photographer and a stylist. So I requested that Jolene Cronin would take the photographs. Jolene has worked with me at the festival over the past couple of years and on other little projects. And she had never photographed a cookery book. So they had a chat with Jolene, and it was agreed upon that Jolene would do it. So I was really happy that I was given that license to bring somebody I knew along with me, and we both had a new experience. And Orlin Elegant styled the photographs, and she was absolutely amazing to work with. So together we had a lovely little team here. My friend Roisin, who worked with me for many years, helped me in the kitchen, along with Fiona, who works with me as well, and Adele. And so we were busy flaking out recipes as they were being photographed.
And did you do it all here?
Everything was done here.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. You've just given me a little tour. We might go in a minute. You have a catering section to the house.
Yeah, I have a catering kitchen in the house. We have a little dining room where we meet people and we have tastings with them. And then we have a lovely...
Eat away there, by
big,
the way.
Oh, thank you. We have a lovely, big, light-filled catering kitchen that is just such a lovely, happy place to work in. People from other kitchens who come here to use it sometimes, you know, be it at the festival or if somebody's, working on something locally and they want to use my kitchen, they just love the space. It's fab. So that's where we have all, and we have a cold room there and all the trappings that one needs for to produce a feast for hundreds of people. So it's a great place to work. And for me, I love having the business in my own home because, you know, it's an organically grown business. We started off with a B&B here in 2000. I had a little restaurant here as well. So it was kind of a little restaurant with rooms. And then as the children were here, Micheál and Jerome were born at that time, and Kieran was born in 2004. And really, Kieran was an adorable little baby. But then once he started to speak, you were always very clear what was on his mind. So at about age four, he made it very clear that really he didn't want any of these guests in the house. So, but that was the end to our B&B. It's like, what are all these people doing here, Mammy? Tell them to go away. So we stopped doing the B&B then, and I focused on catering. And catering for me was a very natural thing. My background is hotel management. I'm a self-taught cook. And I think that sort of shows in my recipes that, you know, things are thought through. I'm sensible, I'm practical. I don't have sort of a big kitchen behind me or that big kitchen experience behind me. So, yeah, I focused on catering, and we the catering kitchen got bigger and bigger as the years went on. And so I've been happily cooking away there for the last, let me think, gosh, 26 years.
Wow.
26 years since I started, and probably 20 years that I've been catering. Yeah.
Did you ever see yourself from the start, or as a young person getting into this, or did it just happen?
Oh no, I knew I'd always be doing this.
Did you?
I did, yeah. I did hotel management. I went to Shannon. Well, I just loved it. I mean, from when I was young, I love I love hospitality.
Yeah.
I love people. And I would say if that was my if we talk about our strengths, I mean, my strengths are probably communicating with people and bringing people together, and I've done that through this medium of food. I don't mean just clients, I mean friends, colleagues, but I love the gang I work with in the kitchen. I mean, to get up on a Monday and know that on Thursday, Friday, Saturday I'm going to be working with the three or four people, and we will have such good fun, and we'll sit down at the end of every day and have a bit of dinner, and we take turns cooking for each other, and then on the day of the event where we eat Mars bars and rolls from petrol stations, it's quite a different story, because you know it's up early in the morning, probably not home until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, but I love those weeks and I love that time. So I always knew that I would be in hospitality, and people who work in hospitality generally, we're all birds of a feather, you know, we're kind of high energy, good fun people. And I love the whole, I love everything that surrounds hospitality and connecting people together. And I suppose that's come to the fore with my work at the Food Festival, because this is an environment where I get to meet all these wonderful, creative and such hardworking people, because people in our business are so hardworking. And they're passionate, because, and they're curious. Because if you don't have those three things, you just wouldn't be in the business. Mm. Because there are much easier ways to earn a living than what we do.
Open Mic, the podcast.
Live your life your way at home with Davida Home Care.
Brought to you by WLR.
Some listeners may think that I know Eunice Power very well, and that she let me into her house for the chat because I know her well. It's not the case. I only know Eunice from meeting her professionally in terms of interviews for the West Waterford Festival of Food and other matters. So I must say, privileged and honoured that she let me into have a chat with her. And we broached the very difficult subject of love and loss.
As I said recently with another interviewee, I don't necessarily know my interviewees beforehand through a couple of interviews that we've done. So thank you again for letting me have a chat with you. Who is Eunice Power? And that's an awful silly question in some respects, but like, how would you describe yourself?
How do I describe myself? Well, I'm still, I mean, I don't think I'm still kind of fully grown up yet, you know. There's a bit more in me.
It's obviously rude to ask any lady her age, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'm in my early to mid-50s.
like myself.
Probably more mid, yeah, I'd say. We're probably of an age. I don't know how I describe myself. I think I'm enthusiastic. I'm optimistic. I'm hardworking, and I'm just, you know, just myself, really. Like I am very much like what you see is what you get. There aren't many sides to me. I love what I do. I love my family. And I'm really lucky. Like, and I love where I live. I'm lucky that I live in Dungarvan, and I feel I'm surrounded by an amazing community here, and that's really important to me. And as my life gets, as I get older, the simple things are more important to me. Just if that makes any sense.
Totally.
Yeah. And I'm curious about people. I love them. I love having a little bit of fun, you know. But I'm also like my own company. I'm good on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't tell you beforehand what questions we're going to ask or anything like that. So, is there two sides to Eunice Power? Is there two sides to Damien Tiernan? Is there the public persona? Is there then another quieter side? Is it, or is it, as you say, what you see is what you get? Because for people that are in the public eye, like you and me, it's very easy to put up a facade, but not consciously. You learn to be in the public eye.
Yeah. So the public eye, like when I think of the public eye, I think of like Live TV or something. I don't see the public eye as like walking around Dungarvan. I don't think anybody takes a blind bit of notice of me or anything else that I do.
But you're well known. You're a personality.
Yeah, probably. I suppose I am, but I don't see any of these things about myself, you know. There's the professional me, you know, and then there's professional me where, you know, I go in and I do my job and everything else. The rest of me is what you see is what you get. It's like am I private? I'm probably a little bit private. I'm public. I'm private. I'm public private sector. I'm myself. Like if I met you on the street, I would be the same to you as I am with you now.
Yeah. And do you let people in then? Would they have a close circle of friends?
Yeah, I have a really close circle of friends. Do I let people in? Yeah, I'm always open to new people, to chatting to new people. But I'm also really busy. So I probably don't have as much time as I'd like to spend with people. So then you end up spending more time with your close circle. And I, you know, in the last couple of months, I've been through the mill a bit. So I found my close circle has very much protected me, you know? Yeah.
For people that don't know,
what
happened?
My son died, my son died in May this year. He didn't intend to die, but it was just the way.
Tell me a little bit about Jerome, if you wouldn't mind.
Jerome was the, he's the middle of our three boys, the eldest being Micheál, then there's Jerome, and then Kieran. So Jerome was just fab. Like, it's actually so weird speaking about him in the past tense. He was just an incredible personality. He was the cutest little baby. He was a lovely, quiet little fellow. And then once he got his legs kind of figured out that he could move, he went at the rate of knots, and he never stopped. He was really adventurous. He was go, go, go. A huge emotional intelligence, you know. Always was in tune with other people. His friends loved him. They absolutely loved him. I suppose at home, you know, I had the classic parent-child relationship where we were, actually, we're very alike, you know, so we used to bounce off each other a lot. He was high energy, didn't always think before he leapt, but, you know, I don't mind that. But it did create a lot of problem-solving opportunities for me over the years, yeah.
Was he involved? I saw some photographs there in the loo. Was he involved in sports?
My God, ponies. Horses were his life. He absolutely loved horses. From when he could get up on a pony, he just didn't get down again. Absolutely loved it. Loved the adrenaline. Loved the horses themselves.
And did they love him back?
Oh, yeah, they loved him. He was really talented. You know, he was just brilliant. And the people he met through horses, and we went off to college and did hotel management in Shannon. And then he would have graduated actually last week from TUS in Limerick, where he did, he ended up doing event management in the end. And he didn't particularly want to go to college. I persuaded him into it because I felt that he needed that time to kind of grow into himself, and which he did, and he loved it, and he was brilliant, and he had such great experiences. But you never knew who he was. He was like, he was wild enough, you know. He was always on the go. Passport was always in the back pocket, ready to go.
How old was he last birthday?
He was 24. He would have been 25 on the 27th of July. Yeah.
It's still very raw.
Absolutely.
And again, I'm sorry for asking you this, and it's not the reason I'm here today and to do this book. And it's funny, I was looking at that book and I'm thinking of using that as a cathartic way, maybe to not move on in any way, but just to keep your mind busy.
Well, the book was pretty much completed.
Done beforehand.
Beforehand, yeah. We were in the middle of doing the photography for the book when Jerome died. So he was very much involved in that process, especially on the eating side of things, you know, when photographs were taken. So it was important for me to finish the book because he was so proud of it. He was going like, "Mom, it's unreal. Like, you're doing a book. My God, that's unreal. It's great, yeah." I rolled on. I have, I suppose I'm a person.
How did you do that?
With a sense of responsibility, and I had committed things and I did it. And you know, when you're kind of working with other people and you commit to things, you do it and you just roll on. And sometimes it's as simple as taking, just getting up in the morning and trying to take each day as it comes.
But nobody, and I was talking to you off camera, off air about this, tragedies visit many different families. Nobody can tell you what the blueprint is.
Mm. No, they can't. Like, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do from the very beginning that this happened. And I was saying to one of my friends, actually, was chatting to me one day. It was a couple of weeks after Jerome died, and she was talking about something that happened at work, and she was kind of, you know, get me out or whatever. And she said, "God, I keep forgetting. Is it okay for me to talk to you like this?" And I said, "Well, you know, nothing between us has changed. You know, it's and I'm still the same Eunice, I'm still the same person. And just sometimes you have to navigate things differently. Like, grief is an unusual thing. You don't know where or when or how it'll hit you. And I look at other people in the same position as I'm in, and I look at them and I see they have somehow survived, and so will I.
Is there a pressure to conform to a certain perception of how somebody should grieve?
Is there a pressure? Do I feel a pressure? No. No, I don't. No, I don't feel any pressure. I suppose I would shy away from drawing attention to it and to attention to myself, maybe. But no, people have to do whatever's right for them.
Yeah.
You know what? We're all long enough in the tooth now to not judge anybody and to let people be themselves. Life is really short. And if nothing else, that certainly has brought that home to me. Life is really short. Don't be in a rush to do anything. Don't be... I'd say that to young people as well. Like, don't be in a rush to do anything. Don't put pressure on yourself. And behave whatever way you want to behave, as long as you're not upsetting anybody else, you know? Or not upsetting anybody else unduly, but I don't mean upsetting, but causing harm to anybody else, you know? Like, sometimes you might say things or do things that might upset other people, but, you know, it's never like in a... never in a thoughtful way or a thoughtless way.
I don't want to ask you too many questions about Jerome. Did Jerome put pressure on himself?
Jerome, yeah. Absolutely, he did put pressure on himself. Yeah, he wanted to be... Yeah, 100% he did, yeah. Yeah, and he put pressure on everyone else too. Yeah, he absolutely did. He was brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, he wanted to be the best at what he was doing.
Yeah.
He did put pressure on himself. And, you know, he was ambitious. He was curious, he was ambitious.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course he did. And in fact, I would say all my three boys put pressure on themselves to be good at what they do. They're three really hardworking individuals, and they want to be the best at what they do, you know? Yeah, be it, like, Kieran is farming, and he works so hard, and he takes such pride in what he does, and he puts pressure on himself to do a really good job every day. Micheál is running, and he puts pressure on himself as well. So we all put pressure on ourselves. Maybe it came from me. Maybe I'm the pressure pot. But actually, their dad, Edmund, is also, you know, a perfectionist and works very hard. So I think we all put pressure on ourselves. Do you put pressure on yourself?
I do, in certain ways. We only did a piece recently about perfectionism on the radio and how people can excel with certain aspects of perfectionism. Are you a perfectionist?
I probably would have been a perfectionist. I might have been a bit of... I mean, it's a very sad and lonely place to be a perfectionist, because it's very hard... It's very hard to get there. So at times you have to just say, you know what, that's good enough. So for myself, I'm probably not a perfectionist. If I'm working for other people, I really put pressure on myself.
You want things to be
to
right.
To get everything
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Would you ever think of running for election?
Absolutely not. God almighty, no.
Expect that question.
Yeah, I'm way too straight. Yeah, like straight as in honest, you know. And then also my filters wouldn't be properly in place, like I get myself into all kinds of bother, I'd say. Yeah.
And that honesty, does it get you into trouble or do you know when to be honest?
It used to get me into a lot of trouble. I probably improved a little bit. But, you know, now, like... sometimes it gets me into trouble in my own mind. Well, it used to be like I shouldn't have said that, but now I kind of don't care anymore, you know. It's and you also trust the people you talk to.
You do,
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, you do. Can I ask you, have you got a favorite time of the year?
This time of the year,
November. Or the fall, as they call
it. Yeah, I love this time
of
the year. And so, you know, a lot of people like absolutely love the summer, love throwing their clothes off, getting out in the sun and having a great time. For me, the summertime is always a very busy time. It's a time when I, you know, typically would be very busy at work because I'm catering for a lot of outside events. I'm in on chips. But there's something about this time of the year, about the colours in the garden, about that sort of comfort and coziness of November and December. It's the time of year that I love having people to the house to... it's my time to light a fire.
Yeah.
I love it. I love this time of the year.
My granny in Leitrim used to say the same. She used to love when the evenings would draw in because she felt no pressure to be outside. She was a farmer and a farmer's wife. And it was lovely to sit beside the fire.
And sometimes in summertime, I remember when the kids were small, people were talking about all the things they were doing. And I was there like working my ass off and thinking, God, what should I be doing? I mean, at one point I dragged my kids off to a caravan in Wales because all the mothers at school, loads of mothers at school were talking about it. And like we got there and scratched our heads going like, what are we doing here?
This is the silliest thing ever.
I know. Yeah. So I often felt that kind of pressure from mothers that I saw as being sort of, you know, perfect and better mothers than I was. They were more organised and weren't as scattered as I was.
Yeah.
Not scattered, but like just trying to multitask with lots of plates spinning, so to speak. Yeah.
Do you like doing the RT stuff?
Love it. Yeah, it's like a little family up there, and I don't feel any pressure doing it. Actually, it's very much like a little family, and you know what? The community, that RTE community of viewers, is fabulous. You know, generally speaking. And I really felt such an outpouring of love this year when Jerome died. You know, letters, messages. I mean, people were absolutely incredible. And it's great to think that we have that in Ireland, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
From people, again, that you wouldn't expect.
I wouldn't expect.
That you wouldn't know.
And I just thought, gosh... this is really nice.
It's lovely.
I've been on RTE for about 12 years. I think I've been doing the afternoon show. I think, maybe 12 years. And it's like a little family in Cork. It's lovely.
Mm.
And in the early days, I just loved going up to get away. Like, it was great just to get away for the day from the house. It's kind of a proper excuse. I'm going to be on TV because someone else made the dinner. Yeah.
And Maura and Dahi, great.
Oh, they're lovely. So they are, as they, you know, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
They're very nice.
I know Maura for years now. Lovely. And a lovely piece in the telly about her recently. I don't know if you saw it, about the behind the hall door, the keys to the house.
Yeah, she's really great. Maura is great. But both herself and Dahi are the consummate professionals. They're absolutely brilliant at what they do. And I think they make everybody else feel very comfortable around them.
Hmm.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's not easy, but they're great interviewers. And I think for someone to be a good interviewer, it shouldn't be about them. It should be about the people they're interviewing. And I've seen so many nervous people feel lovely and comfortable on their couch.
Hmm. You seem happy in your own skin, in the sense, Eunice, again, I've got to know a lot about you in the last hour, but you seem somebody who... is confident but not overconfident in saying, okay, let's deal with things in a certain way, whether it be a business or a family thing.
Mm.
And that's hard, but you have to keep going.
Yeah, you do have to keep going. There's no right or wrong way to get on with your life. And you just have to keep going. And some days it's easier than others. I feel at the moment I'm a bit numbed by things, you know. I don't feel like overly happy or overly sad. And I look forward to that day when you kind of jump out of bed in the morning. And I just have to have faith that that day will come.
Yeah, yeah. No, it will, absolutely. Yeah. And the business, again, and chips. I've been there quite a number of times. It's beautiful. And the chips and the fish. And that's going, again, we're in a bit of a hibernation period in winter time, but...
Yeah, like Wastick would be open 7 years in, I know, it seems like yesterday in April. And the thing is, when you open a business like that, first of all, the peaks and troughs, kind of, you find it a bit shocking. But we're used to that now, so we know how to operate it, you know. And it's great. Yeah, I've a lovely team there. May, everybody knows May, who goes in there, she's just fab. We love May. Abby is the manager, she's wonderful. Martin, and I've a lovely team there. They're great. Yeah.
Final question, and we might end the piece with a little bit of music. Have you got any go-to music, either a style of music or a particular band, or if you're dancing around the kitchen on your own or whatever, is there anything comes to mind?
If any of my friends are listening to this, they'll find it highly amusing, because I'm known for having the worst taste in music, like unparalleled. But I am kind of like 80s girl, you know. I love Cher.
Cher, you go, yeah.
And last night I listened to David Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
So when I did my intercert, my grandmother gave me £10, I think. Maybe it was £5, I can't remember. And I bought my second record was David Bowie. And I bought that, Put On Your Red Shoes, I think it was. I bought it in Golden Discs. And yeah, so I love David Bowie. Yeah.
So Cher or David Bowie?
Cher, David Bowie. There are some others in between as well. But at one point, I just had one CD and it was Texas. And everybody came over. I was kind of famous for my Texas CD. Like, I'm absolutely shocking. So people normally take over the music when they come over. Thank God for Spotify playlists. And it's not that I don't like music. It's just that I don't think about it enough. I have enough things going on in my brain, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of feel like we'll fall into it.
Yeah. Eunice, thanks.
You're welcome.
Good luck. Bye now. Good luck.
And thank you, Eunice Power, for that chat. Very best of luck to her and her family and her staff and her friends. And it was a pleasure talking to her.